attending another meeting. So those are the three that I've received. I don't think we have any other apologies. Honour of Sigmar.
Well, Chair, just that in terms of apologies, we need to announce for debates in the House and declarations and things from 11 o'clock.
Oh, yes. Who's affected? All of us.
If any party asks for a division, we will have to rely on the bells and then run into the House.
I guess that affects all of us. So if there is a division, we adjourn, we both come back. That can be very hectic. Okay, I think let's start as much as we can, because there might be divisions. In that case, can I then ask the Public Service Commission to then take the floor? And you will understand that if the bells ring, we have to adjourn and go to the House, but let's hope the divisions won't come soon. Okay, you are welcome. Can you introduce your delegation?
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, the Deputy Chair, who is the Acting Chair of our Commission, now has asked me to lead the delegation, because he's here accompanying us, but also has had meetings. So I'd like to take this opportunity to start with him first. Advocate R.K. Zizani, sitting right behind us, is our Acting Chair. My name is Commissioner Ndumane, and I am responsible for overseeing, monitoring and evaluation within the Public Service Commission. And on my right is Commissioner L.V. Zizani, who chairs the Committee on Leadership and Management Practices. On my immediate left is Govert van der Merwe, who is the acting DG in MNE, and Mr. Piwa Gorza, who is our parliamentary officer. Chairperson, honourable members, is always an honour and an opportunity that we welcome to interact with this committee. Not so long ago, we were honoured with the invitation to present to the committee on our work on 30 day payment. And just to say through you, honourable chair, that we are actually quite delighted by the push and the impetus that we see right across the public service since we made the proposals that we made before this committee, such that most committees now start saying most departments, they insist on them, including where they are with the payment or within 30 days. That we appreciate very much. But today, we are appearing before your good selves to make comments on the medium-term budget policy statement, and also an opportunity that we welcome very much, because it allows us space to be able to advise the committee based on our work on different ways you could approach your oversight in respect of the areas that pertain to our mandate. Today, we're going to ask Commissioner Elvis Zizani to lead us, and Govert and myself will participate during interaction time. Over to you, Commissioner. We have a very short presentation here today because we want to allow more time for interaction with the members. The outline of our presentation have only 5 points. We talk about the strategies are able to significantly improve management practices in the public service, the status of performance agreements of senior managers in the public service, the expenditure against budgets versus performance for national departments that were assembled for this presentation, opportunities for efficiency, effectiveness and value for money, and then we'll have our concluding remarks. This committee asked the EPSC to give an overall assessment of the 2015 MTBPS, but that is not within the mandate of the commission. So we'll talk about the strategies to improve management practices in the park service, which is very, very important for the preference of the public service. The MDP already proposed an overall strategy that focuses on key elements such as professionalizing the public service instead of trying to address each and every management practice and ticking the box. The diagnostic report also on the game chasing the US management phase. The PSC therefore does not want to add new recommendations but would emphasize just only 3 points. First one is to professionalize the public service by changing the current system that we have at the moment. The second point would be to transform corporate support practices by focusing them on outcome in addition to compliance. The third point would be to improve organizational performance management system and accountability structures. On this first point of professionalizing the public service by changing the career system, the PSC published a discussion document that addresses this issue. The document is called Building a Capable, Career-Oriented and Professional Public Service to underpin a capable and developmental state in South Africa. That's a paper that was published in 2015. In South Africa, promotion posts are advertised and anybody, not just career public service, can apply. The country has an open system of recruitment. Then the career system is not designed in such a manner that pools of skills are deliberately and systematically built and promotions are done preferentially from this pool. If all posts are advertised outside the public service, the risk of avoiding someone not meeting tasks, knowledge and skill requirements increases. The PSC consequently recommended that all occupations in the public service be specified with regards to the following points that I will mention. First of all is the job content, the entry requirements with regard to tasks, knowledge and skill proficiency, promotion requirements with regard to tasks, knowledge and skill proficiency, career progression and succession planning, mobility into and out of the occupation, continued professional development requirements, testing or specifying that a member of the occupation can do a specified list of tasks or scope of work. It would also mean giving the member of the occupation the opportunity to gain experience in the range of the tasks of the occupation and to continuously manage the process of building experience. I'm coming to my second point of transforming the corporate support practices by focusing on outcome in addition to compliance. Corporate support processes are highly regulated. No more regulations are needed. It's actually a very heavily regulated environment. Departments should focus on compliance not for the sake of compliance but to achieve the intended purpose of the regulations. In addition to compliance, human resource processes should measure itself against the outcome of getting the right person for the job and employees' conduct and performance. The ratio between corporate support and line function contributes substantially to the high wage bill of the public service. PSC's State of the Public Service Report of 2014 highlights the following: rules remove arbitrariness and create standardization and certainty. They ensure that the objective criteria are applied in an equitable manner in all situations. But rules invariably have the unintended effect of increasing complexity and reducing responsiveness. The mode of administration in compliance rather than solutions-driven, human resource units in departments become enforcers of the rules rather than serving the line function, and they may use their power in a limiting manner. There is also a considerable cost to the administration of these rules. PSC consequently proposed that DPSA undertake a regulatory impact assessment. On our point on transforming the corporate support practices by focusing them on outcome in addition to compliance. We are giving an example here, an example of the performance management and development system. The performance management and development system was implemented with the goal of improving performance in the public service. There is, however, doubt whether the system actually achieved this objective or the objective of measuring performance fairly and objectively. The PMDS is the source of majority of differences with respect to the PSC at the moment. In fact, this has been happening for years now. The system is overly bureaucratic. Measurable performance standards are rare. Research done by the PSC questions the affordability of the system in terms of time it takes and direct cost of monetary rewards. It's actually used as an additional income for officials in government, but it ignores totally what the system seeks to achieve to improve performance instead. The PSC consequently recommended that the PMDS should be reviewed, and this has been communicated to the regulating department at the PSC. The PSC has in the past pointed out many corporate support issues, and this needs continued attention. For example, departments not implementing court awards and judgments, the cost of prolonged periods of precautionary suspensions with full pay. In fact, recently, honorable members discovered that there is a province who have an official who has been sitting on suspension for 12 years, and in another department, 4 years on precautionary suspension. Also note the outsourcing functions that ought not to be. We have officials appointed to do the work, but the work is done by consultants, and the officials have to withdraw salaries for managing consultants. And we also noted this point that has been highlighted earlier on by Commissioner Zimande, the issue of not paying invoices from suppliers within the 30-day period. On improvement of organizational performance management systems and accountability structures, the meaningfulness of the performance information in annual reports is not drastically improved, then no meaningful conversation about performance will be possible. There's too much detail on activity level. The focus should be on service delivery objectives and outcomes. The more than 1 year that data should be presented so that performance trends can be established. We also note that the focus should be on performance management on the unit level rather than on individual levels. This would mean measuring performance meaningfully at this level and taking appropriate management action in the case of poor performance. Currently, there is a perception that no action is taken against the underperforming managers. The National Planning Commission said there is an absence of a process for consequences management. The NPP at several places referred to poor accountability frameworks. For managers to take any of a range of possible actions, not just ensure that there are consequences, they need to have authority to do so. Because of the way management system is designed in South Africa public service, this is often not the case. For instance, with regard to health district managers, it was found that poor clarification of roles and lack of decision-making authority limits the ability of program and district managers to effect change. Many district managers lack the capacity or the confidence to translate policies into action. Managers lack agency, believe that they have the ability to influence significant change, and consequently appropriate management action is not taken on poor performance. The PSC consequently recommended that management structure and processes should be reviewed in order to better align the responsibility, authority and accountability. Some of the priorities should help district, school district and police station management. That is referred to in the soft report of 2014. The starting point of performance management is performance agreements. I will not take these slides, honorable members, line by line. It's provided for oversight so that you can see which departments to comply in terms of submission of performance agreements. And we have only sampled the 11 departments, and you can see that not all departments appear on this slide. Where you see red is where the performance agreements have not been submitted for that particular financial year. The next slide talks to budgets versus performance. I will also not take the slide line by line, honorable members, but where you see red is where the performance, as you compare it with the budget, you look at the performance and you look at the budget spent, and you realize that some of the line where it talks about the budget spend, you find that the percentage is higher than the actual performance. For example, when you look at 59% of budget, of performance, 59% by the budget is spent at 99.99, meaning that the budget is all spent, so to speak, but the performance is lower. That's what this slide seeks to achieve. I think even in the second slide, one of the members, we see, for instance, here, the Department of Health, the performance is 47%, but the budget spend is 99.4%, which is actually almost 100% of the budget. As well as in the selection, four of the 11 selected departments' performance improved over the past financial year. Department of Basic Education, Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Department of Health, and then the performance of seven of the departments are about 6%. And it is clear that there is poor link between expenditure and performance, as I have stated earlier on. It is not a direct link because infrastructure program budget is applied, which means that the collection of outcomes of each program is funded by the whole budget of the program. Nevertheless, a good indicator of the accuracy of planning and the performance of a department. On the part of opportunities for efficiency, effectiveness, and value for money, the MTBPS refers in many places to initiatives that will over time improve value for money. These are the expenditure reviews by National Treasury, evaluations by the DPME, social economic index assessment of all new legislation, appraisal tools for capital projects, operational PAGISA, procurement reform. And the PSC wants to emphasize 2 points. One is the delivery model in South Africa is still too top down. Poor learning in departments is one item that we have identified. Then on the delivery model in South Africa is still too top down, we identify the collaboration and coordination where the joint government programs are seen as opportunities for state costs, yet still achieve program objectives. However, this often leads to duplication of structures across the spheres of government. The general trend in the public service is to establish new structures and programs without taking into account the existing provincial and local structures and programs. A typical example is the CRDP. The CRDP was created to achieve rural development from a national vantage point and to bring about development in localities, but it many times taxes the limited capacity of provincial and local efforts by requiring them to attend new committees and report progress to a new program and where duplicates the efforts of provincial and local activities. As we were discussing, we said that if planning can be done, for instance, at a minimum level, that would improve instead of having all this coordination as structures that actually monitor what has already been implemented without checking who implements what. What is more, the program chances are further diminished if it increases the confusion about roles, especially if functions have been inadequately assigned intergovernmentally in the legal framework. There is this PSC 2015 evaluation of the capacity of the South African Public Service to operate collaboratively. Then we identify poor planning in departments, department strategy and annual strategic and annual development plan simply contain the 5-year and annual objectives of each spending program on the outcome and output level and form the basis of performance reporting to Parliament. They are not a sufficient basis to make real strategic trade-off decisions. They do not present Treasury with spending options from a cost-benefit point of view. The last point is to present Treasury with options require good planning and financial modeling capacities, capabilities that are mostly absent in the bank service today. The capacity that exists is mostly limited to treasuries and institutions like the Financial and Fiscal Commission. A key intervention to improve the state of the public service would be that more departments acquire this capacity. Professions that do not analytical work, financial modeling, policy analysis, evaluation, strategic planning, organizational development, process design should be a priority. In conclusion, from the perspective of effective value-driven administration, the MTBPS contains valuable recommendations as highlighted in this presentation. The MTBPS is less clear about human resource strategies, and the work of the TSC drives to give practical, implementable recommendations that complement the proposal of the NDP and this MTBPS. I thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any additions?
Mr. Chairperson, as you could see, Jane, that in the list of the areas that the committee has asked us to provide comment on, we only focused on those where we've actually done the work and where possible also point the committee to the actual reports that we have developed in that area so that if there is a need, we can always provide that afterwards to the committee so that it forms a meaningful tool for oversight. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me therefore allow honourable members to engage with the presentation. Who wants to start? Honourable Sheikh Imam will be the first. Honourable Fid will follow. I'll take hands as we go on.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Commissioner, and your team for your presentation. What I find is that we are certainly on the same page. A lot of what you are alluding to here are some of the issues that we have discussed and deliberated on many occasions in this particular committee. A few concerns for me, however, is, and I think we must agree, there's a massive difference between the money that is being spent and the output. It's clearly not there. And so I wanted to tell you what some of the recommendations that you're making, have they ever been considered? Is somebody listening to you, some of the recommendations that you're making on all that you identify and the challenges that we are picking up on the ground? I'd like you to tell us whether there is some consideration to your recommendations. And I would imagine that is one of the very, very important things is to identify and find solutions in which I think is really not happening. I must also agree when you talk about the duplication of structures, and that seems to be happening all the time. In fact, there's about 10 structures now that oversee something that could have been done, and because someone is around has not done it, and again, because there's not enough consequences, what we are doing is we are duplicating, and somebody is overseeing that, and somebody is overseeing that. But I'm going to ask you one broad question. Do you not believe a lot of this lack of service delivery or performance on the ground is as a result of the second tier of government that is the provincial structure that is not performing? Because I would imagine that if they had, it would create less of for to be done by the national government. But also I find another challenge, and that is your national departments and your ministers have absolutely no role to play in the appointment of the NECs, the DGs, the HODs in provinces and things, but they are the ones that have to respond and answer to the failures and the weaknesses on the ground. They have nothing to do with it. And for me, that is a concern, but I don't know whether at some stage you would want to recommend that ministers or national departments have a role to play in the appointment of provincial NECs and other senior management staff here on the ground. That's the I think that is one of the things we have discovered is it would appear that strategic plans are not well thought about, they're not well planned, they are just coming here to get these budgets, and then we find once it's approved, really they can't apply it because they're obviously. But now, the question is the issue of capacity, or is people are just accepting and saying, let's come out there, put on the street, get the money, then they worry about it. My understanding is that when you come with a plan, it means your plan must be ready for you to go out there and implement. And that's why we would approve the budget, but the moment you're approving the budget, it's really not happening. And time and time again, we find you having a serious challenge there. I'm worried about when we talk about promotions also from within, and certainly I can tell you it is not happening. In a lot of instances, I can tell you, the low morale among SAPs alone speaks volumes of why we have the serious current challenge in the country. My understanding is, I think after, 9 years or 8 years or 11 years, constables are supposed to be automatically gone to the next rank. It's not happening. There are senior management people with expertise and knowledge who can really assist are not getting the new promotions. People are being left out for various reasons. It seems like we're living in a who-you-know world, not what we know and what we're capable of. And that seems to be playing a negative. I had a call this week from a very senior member, that colonel that used to be in the police force, but that left the police force, and explaining all the serious challenges there. But generally, if you speak to police officers on the ground, in terms of promotions, it's just not happening. They have a serious problem. So I want to be. But the problem I have is, if we talk about promoting from within, it's a very good thing to do, I must admit. Ideally, yes. But presently, based on the capacity we have, because I think we have a capacity problem, there's a lot of the people that do, and I'll give a good example. Now, recently, what happened? Both of our staff were not paid. My problem is, why did it have to appear in media before we decide to address the problem? Where management at the post office is not aware we're going to run into trouble at the end of this month and we're not going to be able to pay our salaries. Why did it have come when the minister said he's now intervened and they're going to get paid? My question is, why was that intervention not there? Why did management not bring the attention of the minister and the relevant authority? We are running into trouble. Why so late? This is my problem. So I'm saying prevention rather than cure, like your Minister of Health. Prevention rather than cure. We can address each other. We know they're there. I don't know whether we have the will to resolve these problems. And it's creating that negative perception. Nothing is being done. Everything we're doing is wrong. Everything is failing. And that's not true. There's a lot of success. But these challenges are not being addressed head on. And number one problem in the country is consequences. Very few or nothing. And that's why people believe we can always hide this. So I want you to guide us and tell us, what do you think should be the way forward? Starting right from the ground. I wish everybody starts the ground, not about what we're proving and what we're doing. So commitment must come to the people that perform, nobody else has to worry about. They're not doing it. Next structure not doing it. Next structure not doing it. You've got 10, you're paying 10 people or 50 people to do the job of one person who didn't do the job. So again, it's a burden on the taxpayers. So maybe you should actually answer. Chair, I'll give my other colleagues an opportunity and then supplement it.
Thanks, Honorable. Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I don't normally say thank you for presentations, but this one, I think it's useful. And it's a pity, though, that only 11 departments were assessed, because if we look at the results of the 11 departments, then it's scary to think what you had seen the other departments. So, and it's only 40 departments, so it wouldn't take a substantially longer, a substantially longer time on the chairperson. So, and I think it's important that the all the departments are analyzed, because it doesn't look good. We know that in the public sector there are problems, there are challenges. Minister Nene said in his MTBA statement that there has been an increase in the wage bill, and there's been an increase in the quantity of staff somewhere, but there hasn't been an increase in the quality. So it is so we need to look at that area and try to rectify. And that's where the information that we have now, Honourable Chairperson, is useful, and we really need to start using it. We say every time we say we need to use this information, action needs to be taken, but then we sit here and then we do nothing. Maybe I'm being harsh, but we don't do enough of what is supposed to be done. I'm suggesting that we don't use these briefings by different institutions that give us valuable information just as tick boxes, to say we tick the boxes. said that we've done it, we've seen PSC, so it's fine. They told us what the problems are. We are waiting for next year to see if there's any improvement. And I think maybe that's where we're failing as members, and we need to take it serious now. So thank you. I also noticed that there's an anti-corruption line at the end of the presentation. Can I just ask as to Honourable Chair, the amount of cases that are reported and what the success rate is? In other words, what number of convictions there are, if any? Because if there aren't any, then clearly we are failing. If I go to the presentation, slide number 4 talks about, and again, I think my honourable colleague here alluded to that, about the post-enterprise after public service, the risk of pointing someone not meeting past. Now, I have a different view on that. Why, yes, anybody that is worth their pounding salt should be promoted. But on the other hand, if you have their good in the public service, then surely you must say thank you to them. Well, maybe not even thank you, but ask them to go and find a job somewhere else. So if there's anybody that cannot fulfill a duty, surely action needs to be taken against that person, obviously within the law. So I'm saying, yes, it's good to only advertise inside, but then you, what about your, for example, your graduates? When do they get the experience, and when do they get the opportunity to enter into the public service? Slide number 6 talks about the, I've touched on that one. Slide number 7, it talks about the PEMDS as a source of a majority of grievances referred to. Now, if somebody is aggrieved because of a PEMDS, my understanding should be a development tool check. But if somebody has a problem with being developed, then surely those are probably yourself that are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. So I don't buy that one, that majority of grievances are as a result of a PEMDS. The last bullet point on that slide as well talks about the PC consequently recommended that should be reviewed. Now, I understand you implement tools, you introduce them, and sometimes they don't work. But something has, and I'm sure this tool must have cost a bit of money, they normally do these tools. But was that not tested at the beginning before implementation? Because then you would obviously have less issues to deal with. On slide number 8, that those issues dealt with, they are shocking to say the least. And it, what is disturbing here and concerning is that it's very empty. In other words, and forgive me, I'll explain now, if the department is not implementing court orders, the cost of a long period of precautionary suspension with full pay, 12 years and 4 years, full stop, outsourcing functions that not ought to be. You know, surely, with the amount of money that you spend in the public service, this needs to be taken more serious. I mean, the affected parties really need to be taken to task, and we've got the legislation. I'm sure of it, but as long as you don't implement it, then it's going to be a useless exercise. You know, every day coming, bring us the information. We need that. I'm not pointing fingers, but we need to act and use this information and say that we need to make sure that it doesn't repeat itself. Because if you look at the performance agreements and so forth, we might get to there just now. No. Then it doesn't look good as well, especially when departments repeatedly do not conform. Then it is concerning. Slide number 9 talks about the third bullet point there. This would mean measuring performance meaningfully at this level and taking appropriate management action in the case of poor performance. And that is what I was talking about. It comes up every time. Poor management performance. And you'll see, you've given us information as well where some managers don't even submit performance agreements. And I'll talk about the results that we've given, Honorable Chair, as to, I have a different analysis of the results, and this is just my way of looking at it. On slide number 11, and this is where I was, this is the one that I was talking about, which talks about the performance agreement. Now, this is where I differ, because we see there are two reds. Now, if you look at it, I'll look at it the other way and say that there are only four greens. Because the others, even though somebody's acting, surely that person should also have to submit some sort of an agreement, whether it's short term or long term, but that person. So therefore, the fact that those persons are acting and then the other have submitted after that, it's a failure to submit information timely. And then I think what was the other? Yes, so that's where I'm seeing it. And if you look at it, it repeats itself time and again. If I just move on to the performance again, you have a similar trend there where the departments, in some instances there's aggression, and in some instances it's not much of an improvement. So it needs to stop somewhere. You know, if you look at DOE, where our problems are, where we have a major crisis currently, 40.4%, and I'm looking at the recent, the most recent year, and with the spend of 83.6%, it's surely, it cannot be tolerated for much longer. Honorable Chair, I'm nearly done now. Okay, I touched on the 11, this is the, but let me repeat it, because it's worth repeating. The departments, only 11 were analyzed. Surely, if that is the case, once you see there's a problem, that's normal. If you get 11 and you're happy with 11, then you sort of normally you satisfy yourself that the other departments should be okay. That's just sort of, I mean, normally you just, that's what you tell them, that you're going to continue to see whether public service in the departments are affected. But if it's 11 and they're performing poorly, then I think there is a need to an analysis of the other remaining chairperson. Thank you. That's all I have for now.
Thank you very much. Honourable Cross.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. We must recommend the PSC for this presentation. Two of the very interesting things that they point out is that that makes this presentation interesting, that it first identifies some of the challenges and begins to propose solutions rather than just making a statement of challenges, which I find quite interesting. At least we have something to look at and consider. The second point, Jefferson, which I find quite interesting, is in slide 18, where you are saying that the MDPPS whilst it talks to issues of budgeting and the division of revenue, etc., and so on, it is quite silent on the human resource strategies. And I think that's the issue that this committee has got to take quite seriously. So I think it is important. The one area also which I think is quite interesting is why you're saying that making reference to a free-for-all entry into the public service and the challenge of going into the public service academic qualifications very often without career qualifications, and that presents a challenge. And I think that open free-for-all kind of approach has got to be addressed, so that we begin to attract right from the beginning people who are academically and career qualified, if we want to fast track the attainment of a capable public service. Whilst emphasizing, the built-in kind of career training, which which leads me to the first question related to slide 3. When you're making reference to professionalizing public service, I want to find out the extent to which Palama and the academy that was launched by Minister Sisulu when she was Minister of the Department. How effective have these two institutions been in terms of building capacity in the public service? And if there are witnesses, perhaps we could ask you to look at strengthening those bodies so that we strengthen the capacity of the internal capacity whilst looking at a further recruitment of qualified persons. So let's have a word about the effectiveness of these two structures. Slide number 4. The discussion document that you have proposed, I see that you developed that discussion document this year. I just want to find out what is its status as of now. What are the time frames that you have proposed it should be looked at, and suggestions that you make be implemented, so that we don't just have a discussion document that gets discussed and that it is left in the shelves. But I think it's an important document that you have developed. Slide number 5. The point that you made there suggests to me that there is a need of the evaluation of all the existing posts and their incumbents. It might be a very huge task, but perhaps it needs to be done. Is that what you are implying when you make those proposals? Because otherwise, until we do this kind of evaluation of the existing posts and their incumbents, and probably the two main structures that you may have made reference to as well, I want to link those two. Is there a need to rationalize also the two main structures, because some of them might be working at cross purposes, some of them might be duplicating the work, etc. and so on. And that itself requires that you employ more people who you may not need. And that leads us to the issue of the pressure of the wage bill on the fiscus, which probably may not necessarily have obtained had we been able to do this evaluation, rationalize the structures, and so on. Shouldn't we do that kind of task so that we might be paying for things that we don't need really? And for posts that we don't really need, at least at the top management level, because I see that you're making reference as well to the fact that our public service is top heavy. We might actually be needing more jobs on the frontline desks instead of the top, the construction. The slide 7. Okay, I've linked that with the, because you were talking about the bureaucracy, I've linked that with the previous question. Slide 8. Departments not implementing court awards and judgments. I don't know whether one chairperson one should ask this question, whether is it because heads of institutions don't have the legal capacity to implement, but what does it mean? I mean, if the court has made a ruling and has given a judgment and you just park it there, you don't implement, what does it mean? Is it lack of capacity, a regulatory authority to say, now I have a court outcome and I have the legal authority to implement without without repercussions? What is it? Because it means then we continue to pay people who should actually be out of the service, and we are disadvantaging those who might come in and add value to the service. I think those are the questions that I want to ask. Thank you.
I'm going to Honorable Shopistole, Honorable Nyalungu, Honorable McLaughlin. Anybody else for now? Okay, we'll end those and allow the team to respond. And let us ring.
I think that's for the start here. Yeah. It's 11 o'clock, I think they're starting us.
No, it's not for Bush. Okay.
Honorable Shop, that's for them. Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you to the Commission for a very well thought advice to the committee. You know, Chairperson, we are very fortunate that the people who come to advise us actually do their work thoroughly. I don't think they should end up with the 11%. I think these are very difficult times. We don't have money as a country. We need to make sure that the resources that we give to departments do exactly what we want them to do, or what they requested the resources for. So we need to actually have all the departments being assessed. And I would suggest, Chairperson, as you go to the seat, that we've got a starting point. Let's call the 11. All the questions that we are asking here, we must ask the department directly. Because this is serious. The picture is not good. And we just need to start with the 11 while we wait for the others to follow. And make sure that we give ourselves time to go through all the departments. The reports that we have referred to, I think we would be very happy to get them. It will assist us. The 4 years and 12 years of low to people getting it at home, seated at home, I don't think we can live with that. We cannot say we have got no resources as a country and there are people sitting at home and getting money. Who is paying those people? You know, the head of the department has got a task according to the Public Finance Management to make sure that accounts to this committee or all other committees for resources that we have allocated. For a department to be paying for 4 years cannot worry that this is a waste of resources. I find it quite surprising. It's worse for 12 years. So we just need to get the department to come here and actually make sure that we write a very strong report per department for the House to consider, because maybe we might not need to borrow anything at all. I think the money that we require is just within the department. For now, I hope I rest my case. Thank you, Honorable
Chair. Honorable Shoppe took my word. As people are getting money when are seated at home, and where that money comes from, because if a person just gets salary at home and another one replaces him or her, giving the same salary, who is paying that money? While other hand, there is no service delivered. People are protesting daily. I just wanted to suggest that if you can just give us the name of the province and the department that these officials, the 12 reservation officials and the 4 so that we can do our oversight work on those departments and those provinces and those officials. Thank you, Chair.
We've done this one. You want to? Follow? Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, thank you to the PSC for your presentation. Every time the PSC comes and appears before us, I become more and more alarmed at the state of our civil service. What worries me to an extent is what you're not telling us, because I know there's a lot that's not said. You present to us what you want to present to us, and you don't tell us a lot of the stuff that perhaps you should be telling us, is always my fear. Can I just ask you a question, and I hope you'll be able to answer me, just in the bigger picture, would you be brought back to the National Treasury in a serious attempt to reduce the wage bill? Based on what you're just telling us here, the impression I get is that we have a huge duplicity. We have a lot of what we call dead wood, people who just not perform any function, like those who are suspension on full pay, but there's a lot of other instances as well where there are people employed who are not really doing much at all, they're not adding any value to the system. You're in a peculiar position to be able to identify those kind of people, and can you be working with the National Treasury to say these people should be redeployed or moved out or retrenched or whatever the case may be in an ultimate attempt to reduce the wage bill, because it's one of our biggest single problems in our budget at the moment is ever increasing wage bill. In the past when you've come and presented to us, you've given us actual figures on the numbers of HODs who have signed performance agreements or failed to sign performance agreements. This time you haven't done that. You've just said, given us a few departments and said yes, no, and so on. If I can just refer you to that slide, I just wanted to ask for some clarity on what's actually being told to us there. That is slide number 11. But I can refer you to the line there under human settlements. For the year 2012-13, it says yes. 13-14 says no. 14-15 says after. And 15-16 says acting. Can you please explain to us what you're actually telling us there? Because I don't really understand. I'm not sure what the word after means in this instance. That after somebody was threatened with some action that they actually did it, or I'm not sure what it means. I would also like to know, so it's not only a question of signing a performance agreement, it's whether or not you then comply with what you've agreed to, because that after all is the reason for signing such an agreement. So that someone could come back to you and say, this is what you agreed to, have you actually performed what you agreed to? And on that basis, then that person should be assessed and perhaps disciplined, or given further training or some kind of assistance to enable them to get their level of performance up to what they actually agreed to. Is that kind of action happening? If I can summarize in a way and ask, the PSC seems to me, and it's been an answer to a question I've asked before, I think it was Professor Levine when he was still with you, when I asked him, he said, you don't really have much in the way of teeth. You can make recommendations, but you can't really take any action in a real sense. If Parliament's legislation was to give you more teeth, would you be able to use them effectively? Do you think it would benefit you to be able to come up with some way of resolving these issues? Because the picture you paint to us, with all due respect, is an alarming picture. So my colleagues have already referred to several of the more alarming aspects difference that I see in the report. As I mentioned earlier, this is what you don't tell us worries me a bit. On slide 6, in the third bullet point under 2 there, you say the ratio between corporate sport and line fashion contributes substantially to the high wage rate of the public service. But you could give us a lot more than that, because that doesn't tell us what that ratio is. And I think the more we know about that ratio, the more this will inform us. You give us a clue here, but you don't give us the whole picture. That's the sort of thing I'm referring to. You say further on the same slide, there's also a considerable cost to the administration of all these rules. So now we're having a set of rules, and we keep introducing more and more rules to try and make people comply. And then we have to monitor that compliance again. So once again, we're spending a lot of money to make sure people are doing what they should be doing without having to be monitored to do it all the time. It just seems that we have this sort of ever downward spiral, that we employ people to do a job, and then we have to employ somebody else to check on whether they're doing that job or not, and we have to employ somebody else to see, is the what we're doing actually effective, so must we introduce another rule or two, and then somebody else has to be employed to decide what those rules are going to be, and then somebody else has to come along and monitor that rule, and is that now being applied? We're going round and round in a circle, just trying to get people to do their jobs. It just seems to me such a waste. Can't we just employ people who are reliable and responsible that can do their jobs without having to be mollycoddled and whipped and lashed into shape all the time? Just another question on slide 7. You make the statement that the system is overly bureaucratic. My question there is, does that result in less time being spent doing the actual work you should be doing? And if the answer to that is yes, then surely we need to be addressing that issue. So if you're spending all your time as an employee in the public service on bureaucratic issues and not what you're actually employed to do, you're not going to be achieving the outcome, you're going to be achieving some bureaucratic function. And obviously we need to be looking at it surely. My question is, can we change this? Can we address that issue somehow? I see you recommend that the PMDS should be reviewed, but obviously it can be and should be. The very alarming slide, of course, is slide number 8. It's the sort of thing that's been pointed out to us before. We had the situation of the Department of Transport down here and there, but on goods and services for the first quarter was 339% overspent for this very reason, that they had been avoiding paying a court order for some years, and it finally caught up with him, and they had to make a plan and pay off at 40 million rand a month. Now, obviously, this can't be allowed. If we're going to accept the fact that we do have a court system and that we say that we comply with the rule of law, when a court gives an order, we must comply with that. Surely the reason why this happened is because people are uncomfortable with the fact that we've got to the state where there's been a court action and the result. Now they try to avoid it by just avoiding the court order because it's embarrassing for them. We can't allow this. Surely this has a huge negative impact on the performance of people, the performance of government in general. The question of paying within 30 days doesn't need mentioning it. Over and over and over again, we have this issue. We just don't seem to be able to address it for whatever reason. On slide 9, you make the point that the focus should be on service delivery objectives and outcomes. I would suggest that this be linked to a time base as well, so that you need to achieve the outcome, but within a specified time. It doesn't help if you achieve the outcome that you've taken 4 hours as long as you need to in order to achieve that outcome. So can we tie this to a timeline kind of issue as well, please? You say focus should be on performance management on the unit level. I just had a concern there that if you're going to sort of assess the performance on the unit as a whole, you're avoiding accountability again. Because now there's no single individual who's going to be carrying the can. You're going to be looking at the unit. And everyone within that unit is going to be blaming everybody else for the fact that it hasn't performed or whatever. So I would be a bit cautious about that approach. It could be a thought to avoiding accountability, and we're trying not to avoid accountability. We should surely be strengthening, as you afterwards said, that it's, well, we must have accountability, but it must be not only in something we have in paper written down, so it must actually be seen to be effective at work. could say a whole lot more, but I think I've addressed my main issues. I was on slide 12, just one technical issue. On the top line there, on basic education, you said the performance is 84.6%, but it's in green. It should be in yellow because it's below the 90% threshold. Thank you, Chair. I'll give it a deck for now.
Thank you very much. I think I should allow the commissioners to respond to some of the issues raised.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sin and honourable members. Honourable McCaslin, just to assure you that we really treasure the opportunity of coming before the committee, because in terms of our mandate, we are really part of this Honourable House, Speaker Class House. So we don't hide anything. Sometimes we have to structure our presentation in a way that responds to the questions asked, but otherwise we really try to give Parliament everything, because that's where we account. And I would like to just start with the question of the teeth and ask our acting chair to clear that off the way. And any other comment that you'd like to make, then I would come back and deal with the issue, particularly of the piece of work on the developmental state document and how we are approaching that, and the question of whether anybody is listening to us, and then I'll ask others to make comments on very specific issues that have been directed to how we've presented the information, and then finally ask Commissioner Ely to deal with the management and HR issues that have been raised. Advocate Kay Sizani, if you could deal with that issue, please.
Thank you very much, President and members of the Portfolio Committee. I would like to join in the debate by just making a few remarks on some of the very pertinent issues that are raised by members of the committee. First and foremost, Mr. President, I would request that a number of the questions, we respond to them in writing in detail and send them to the committee. But I would like to make a few comments on some of those that have been raised. The first issue is whether the Commission has some teeth in terms of the implementation of the recommendation. A number of the functions of the Commission are advisory, and also we make recommendations both to the executive and to the health of departments. In many senses, Mr. Chairperson, our advice and recommendations are really accepted because they are based on implementation and adaptation of the prescripts. There are very few instances where would require some differences, in which case we therefore insist that we must get a reason for why there has been no such implementation. So at both provincial and zones and at national level, we have quite a good response. And we actually dropped or not pursued any idea that we need to get more making recommendations, much more than they are into directives. In fact, the Constitution and the state law advisors can confirm this, gives us in certain areas that you can give directives, especially on application of employment procedures like dismissals and promotions and so on. And in those instances, we do give directives. And when we give those directives, the public service states are binding within 60 days. And therefore, those are implemented as binding. The key issue that we have raised both with the Parliament and our portfolio government is that the Public Service Commission is a constitutional body that is accountable to Parliament. And therefore, if reports like this and where it makes recommendations need to be seriously followed up by Parliament. That is really what is exciting us now, what we hear here, that when we make these recommendations, Department must be called in to be asked to account on certain matters by Parliament. And we can also and reinforce and support Parliament. So the greatest tip that we have are in the activist
approach that will be taken by Parliament in those areas that we've highlighted as challenges, and we continue to say they remain right. So we really are looking forward to a committee like that to do that. Quickly, Mr. Chairman, let me also raise two other matters that have been raised by panel, which are really critical. The issue of the wage bill and the issue of the structure of government that have been raised as matters that the Public Service Commission should cooperate with National Treasury about. Why don't I bring attention of this committee? It would be very good. I have on the Presidential Review, Remuneration Review Commission, which was led by Chief Justice Mabo. And in that commission, one of the questions that we're dealing with is the question of the wage bill and the question of productivity of the labor force in the public sector. And in one of our team committees, we are dealing with the question of the structure of government, vis-à-vis the services and functions that are constitutional and legislative that are given to those bodies, and also the output of the public service that are given there. So I would suggest, Chairperson, it's one of the commissions that you can invite to come and give a presentation, because you're dealing directly with the issue of are we properly structured in terms of the funds that are given, the legislative mandates of departments, our public service doing what they're supposed to do, and are they being productive, are we getting value for money in terms of what we're paying, and how do we manage to keep the wage bill within the accepted norms, and still perform the functions that our constitutional functions require. So the answer is yes, the Public Service Commission is operating in the sense that the President has been appointed, and the representative appointed to that commission as an ex officio commissioner in that commission to ensure that we drive that commission. Also, National Treasury participates in providing support and making representation to that, and they are dealing basically with those issues that are raised. Mr. Shepard, let me also raise then the last point that I would like, the last three points that I would like to raise before I finish. The issue of the judgments and awards and the 30-day payments. The Commission has looked at this matter and led by Commissioner Zimandi on that, and we'll produce a report on this. Let me just say that this matter is very tragic in a sense, members, and it's one of the matters that government as a whole has not been able to address sufficiently. 2 weeks ago, I attended the outcomes 12th meeting of the Minister of Public Service Administration, and again, this matter was raised. Let me raise the issue of the 30-day payment. One of the problems we still have as of now on the 30-day payment is that a lot of departments still pay beyond that, and more importantly, the challenge is that I'm not talking about, there are two issues, but there are those bills and claims by companies or contractors which are not estimated and are still being held by departments. The 30 days doesn't apply. I'm talking about those that are clear and there are no questions and they should be paid within 30 days. The problem we have with it, as of now, is that National Treasury and the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation still are collecting information on the basis of how many invoices have not been paid over a quarter and so on. They've not even yet set even an indicator in terms of the percentage to say this percentage is acceptable of non-payment and but beyond this, the payment should be done. More importantly, despite the fact that the PPMA requires that departments must pay interest, they still refuse federal, provincial, and local government level to pay interest. And a lot of small and medium companies are going under because they're operating on overdrafts on this matter, and that has not been looking at first. And thirdly, the major problem that the Commission has raised again sharply is that there are no consequences to HOGs who continue to refuse to deal with this. And as a result, basically, they get scot-free. And part of this program then leads directly to the issue that those conductors, despite not being given interest, and despite the issues are still getting bonuses in their departments without paying this, are forced to go to court. And in that court,
or the arbitration or to court. When they go to the arbitration itself, we award the contractor the decision. But of course, the arbitration award is not a judgment yet. And then what department will do would ignore the award. It forces again the contractor to go to court, strike, or to get a judgment yet. They get a judgment yet. Or sometimes the department will then send an SP to go and object at that time, to just trace and so on, further. Or if they don't oppose, they get a court judgment. When the court judgment is given again, just department refuse to pay without any reason. And which is because you're going to, again, go and apply for contempt proceedings and also seek a writ to implement that judgment. Which is quite costly, and then the department of court will pay that with interest now. It used to be 15%, I think it's about 15% now, and all that. So that's why we're bringing this. We have taken even in our opinion as the Public Service Commission to try it and address this. It also not only applies to the contracts in terms of those who have to be paid. It then also applies to the employment section, in the employment sector, where employees are employed, and then they are put in different contracts that are for a long time, then they go to the labor court or the CMA, and they win, and against departments. Without challenging them. If you challenge them, that's fine. But without even challenging or asking for their review, they simply ignore their words. This commissioner, I usually call them social workers, the two of them, are the ones that are responsible for chasing departments to try and get this sorted. But we still have a major problem. The matter, Mr. Chairperson, I'd like to bring to your attention and ask if the committee can help us. I've brought it to a number of departments and also to say that this matter is unacceptable, and ourselves we've taken a strong point around this. The final point that I would like to comment on is that having been led by Commission Zimande and the issue of the School of Government is one matter that the Commission will really keep to ensure that the School of Government succeeds. We have supported it very strongly. That's why we were able to cooperate with the Executive Foreigners to really have the Director General before his term come up, Richard, to come and lead it. But the School of Government is still in a transition because it still has to move from a Department of State to an institution of higher education in terms of the new Public Administration and Management Act. That act has not yet come into force, although it has been signed by the President, so that change happens. But part of the reason we were keen on the School of Government is that we see it as critical in professionalizing the public service and ensuring that we also have a public service. Because what we have really found, members, that we want just to the state, without getting into details, is that the education system that we have in whatever field that I'm trained in, which is in law, that student get an LLB does not necessarily mean that he can draft legislation or declare to government. Does not mean he can write a letter of demand sometime when we find that. And therefore we really need a system that bridges practically that gap between the theoretical academic qualifications and the practical needs of the government of the day. And that's one of the things that we see the School of Government and actually playing a critical role in that. And the Public Service Commission has put its force behind that in ensuring that happens. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Before I ask Robert to address the issues pertaining to the information, if I could just quickly address the question on what then are we going to do with this work. I think it was raised by Honorable Balaza to say we've got this document that we refer to, which is a piece of work that we've done. What I'm going to do with that? In the actual recommendations that we've got in that document, because we really took this piece of work quite seriously to say we now have the National Development Plan, which we have contributed to, particularly Chapter 13, which talks directly to the capacity and professionalizing the public service. How then are we going to do our work and oversight differently as a Public Service Commission? The recommendations there are segregated. There are those that are directed to giving advice to Parliament. We're delighted to report to this committee that the portfolio committee has a whole day workshop on the 11th of this month, and we are presenting at this workshop our findings and recommendations from that piece of work. There is a part that are directed at the directives that we believe that the DSA needs to put out to begin to change the way that the public service is operating. There are recommendations that are directed at the executive, but there's also work that we as the PSC have identified ourselves, which we are putting in our work plan currently. The one big piece of work is that of Section 195 of the Constitution, which is promoting a values-based public service. Because if we can succeed in promoting those values of treating people with dignity, making sure that we are efficient and there is no wastage in the system, even just issues like 30-day payment, that's where it begins. It is about treating the person who has given the service to government with dignity and respect. And it doesn't really require too much by the lines way of technical skills. It's a question of this person has done the work, and if this person was my aunt, how long would I make them wait? And as basic as that. So we've got even the timeframes there, which are the low-hanging fruit that can be done, medium and long term. So the work has begun. And I'd like just to make a quick comment around the issue of outsourcing work that need not be outsourced. And I want to make just a quick example on the managing of e-health in the public service. For some strange reason, this has been outsourced to people who, even some of them, companies that are not even specialists in health. The entire management of e-health in the public service is outsourced, and actually it does not make sense to outsource this management of e-health, because we have in the system at local, district level, at national level, professionals that we pay, institutions that are resourced by government, where public servants can be checked if they are well enough to work. To have to outsource this to people who just create companies for the purposes of doing this, who are not even health professionals sometimes, it does not make sense. I mean, if you are sitting in housing and you've got your skills being correct with all cardiologies and one of you, if you are in case again with your ultimate to be there with all your cardiologists and God knows what neurologists, why then do you want another company outside the public service to check whether public servants are well enough to work or not? That's just one immediate example that can just be dealt with and done with. Never mind all others. So I thought I should just mention that. I know that sometimes when we ask questions around, is anyone listening? Sometimes we do tend not to bring forward areas where actually as the Public Service Commission we have been listened to. We did a whole lot of work around a key destabilizing factor in the public service then, which was giving heads of departments 3-year contracts. We did that work, we brought it forward to the executive, and we said, you are destabilizing, give them no less than 5 years, because otherwise this doesn't make sense. That has been done. We did work that suggested that in terms of professional ethics, actually allowing public servants to do work with government is a serious risk for corruption. Government listened and they even looked at a piece of legislation around that. You have named quite a number of areas. But of course, we're not there yet. we wish we could have every other recommendation and directive that we put out being done. But I think that we also need to celebrate when we've been able to be listened to and something is done about it. Kobax, do you want to quickly deal with the issues that have been raised around the presentation? And of course, yes, we'll definitely do the analysis of all the departments. I think the committee is perfectly correct to suggest that. Kobax?
Yes. I think in the presentation we place the emphasis on diagnosing the problem but also offering solutions and then pointing the committee also to recommendations to the commission. And even those recommendations are quite summarized, so that there are long lists of recommendations in the actual report. But I hear the committee also would have liked to see the data. Many issues we sort of just raised without getting the detail of the data, or like the one member said, we are getting a clue without sort of going into the detail. Now, we are at the moment increasing our capabilities to do this type of analysis. I think the public service generally is actually quite data rich, but it's quite an effort sometimes to make sense of it. And we are putting in place the capabilities to source the data, drill down into it, make the analysis, and come up with summary tables and graphs that can be of help to committees like your committee. And that also applies to the fact that we just sort of made a selection of departments. We could do the analysis for all departments. When it gets to things like identifying local structures and the question when we could work with Treasury to identify those, that would also require, if one would do that for all departments, that would require quite a bit of analysis and drilling down into data. Commissioner, the money also refers to the fact that one of our main projects currently is promotion of line values. Now, as part of that project, we will again define those values, define exactly what the, I'm referring to those values in Section 195 of the Constitution. Define the scope and content of those values and set down the Commission's performance expectations with regard to those values, and then also agree on a set of indicators that the Commission would use to measure the performance of the public service against those values, so that in the future we could, on a very regular basis for all departments, come to committees like yourself with a whole set of data. It would obviously then make the presentation much longer. And then just explaining the after the specific question on the one slide, that means the performance agreement was submitted after the deadline for the commission. It was submitted, but after the deadline.
Thank you very much, members. There was a question about the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, which we manage by assignment. It's not a constitutional mandate for the commission, but we are doing it. If the members require this information, we can forward it to the commission, to the committee. But looking at the information we have now, there are only three provinces that are less than 60% in response to those cases that are reported to the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. And I will list them. KwaZulu-Natal is sitting at cases closed, 90%, I think. Very few cases that are closed. And Northern Cape is 47%. And then we have 53% for Northwest. But we can view that anything less than 100% is not good enough, because they need to respond to all these questions. Thank you, Chairperson. I will go to some of the questions that are not covered by the team. There was a question about the appointments of MCs and senior staff, which include the involvement of the national minister. I must say to the committee that I don't think at the moment that would be possible, because the Public Service Act actually gives powers to MECs as the executing authorities of their departments to decide on the appointment of their staff. Those powers, in fact, the Public Service Act is applicable both to national and provincial departments. So Section 3 of that Act talks to those powers. So the national minister, therefore, cannot come to the province and tell the province who to appoint. And the MECs, there's another process of appointment. They are not really appointed in terms of the Public Service Act. With regards to promotions, there was a question about promotions, which we said in our report is not happening the way it should because of the open system that we have at the moment. Until such time the career planning is improved in departments, then it can happen. But there is nothing that stops the departments in crafting policies, promotion policies that would enable them to promote people from within, but that is not really happening. The review that we spoke about on the performance management and development scheme, we are saying that there is a need for a review, because this, if we trace back the system that we have in South Africa, it's a borrowed system that we actually copied as it is from Australia. But Australia has abandoned the system after identifying these gaps that we see. The problem with the system is that it is linked to individuals, not linked to the performance of the department as a whole. Hence, there is a suggestion that perhaps if you can look at units, the performance of those units, you'll find a situation where in a department, a department that is not performing for that matter, but it's paying a lot of bonuses to people that have performed in their little corners. If, for instance, in your little corner you performed, but if you look at the broader performance of the department did not perform. That's why we are saying there is a need for review. And also, there's a lot of cutting corners in the system. Hence, we are getting a lot of grievances. You look at the role of moderating committees, they are not doing what they are supposed to be doing, they do something else, and when people grieve, those grievances are substantiated, which means that the department will have to pay and pay and pay. It's a very expensive system that really needs to be reviewed, especially with this thing that we're, in fact, we're talking wage bill, which talks issues of salaries and wages, but if you look at other hacks as well, there are things that can be cut off. The Deputy Chairperson has touched on the issue of the wage bill, which I will not touch on, except to say that the Public Service Commission has already made two submissions to the Remuneration Commission, which means we are very serious about this. First, we did a submission on the Service Commissions of Educators in the country. That was our first submission. So the second submission that we made, it involves all public servants. We have already done it. I think we are among the first institutions that have already submitted to the Remuneration Commission. The issue of the management of poor performance is clearly related in the system that we have. But I think there is fear or reluctance from the side of managers to actually implement the management of poor performance, because if a person is sitting in an organization and the person is not performing, I think this person is not supposed to be here. This person, if the person cannot be managed inside, the person must be managed out, so that people that can be able to perform can be brought in, so that such a delivery can happen. There was a question about the norm that we do not have, also that Treasury does not have, that DPSA does not have, about the ratio between the support service and the line function. But I mean, if you have multiple support in your business, but you have less people who are supposed to deliver, then that again, even if it's not regulated, we always get questions from National Treasury about it. Why do we have a structure that has so many people sitting in the support, but very few people that are supposed to be delivering on the products? it goes back to the issue of service delivery, where people are complaining out there because service delivery is not happening. But we have a whole bunch of people occupying homes in Accra which does not really translate to service delivery. That is why we are questioning it. It's something that we have taken up recently with DPSA, we still have to have meetings, that it's an area that has to be regulated. We need to know which, how many numbers should we have in the support service, and how many numbers should we have in the in the in the line function. The issue of the awards and has been covered by the feature person also, but I just want to say that it's not only the awards or the court awards that we're talking about. There are also awards from the CCMA and the bargaining council that the department just ignore. Sometimes informally we do intervene if we know of someone who has an award, because you find that there's a lot of ignorance among public servants themselves. Because you have an award, you have a process of enforcing the award at the labor court, but sometimes they don't do it. They say, okay, I have this award, but the department is refusing. But the department also didn't review the award. So we have that as well, which from time to time we do intervene. The issue of the cautionary suspensions, which I think is a main issue for this committee as I was listening, we took up a case that we knew about where there was an official sitting on precautionary suspension for 4 years. And when we followed up with that department, which is a national department, they said, you know, by the way, this official that we are following up, it is the one official that was supposed to chair a disciplinary hearing of one official who is now on suspension for 5 years. So they didn't move. They were sitting, and I think the 12-year one comes from KwaZulu-Natal. I think I've covered some of the questions that were not covered by my colleagues. Thank you, Chairman.
Any more comments from your side? Is Nana?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. My concern is, yes, I'm aware that in terms of legislation, the national ministers don't have any say in that. But I think what I want to know is, what do you suggest to do in the future? Should it be something we should look at, given the challenges we are having in terms of oversight by provincial departments and others? So that's what that would be my comment in. With regard to this issue of judgments and things, I'm a little bit concerned because the emphasis seems to be on those that are not, or judgments that have been given, or arbitration awards and things. But maybe we need to go a little bit deeper into this and see, why is it even going to that stage where judgment must be taken? Why must the matter end up being bought at a much higher expense? And who are these people? I also believe within our mandate to assist us, this committee at some stage, to give us information on repeat offenders that are not paying within 30 days. Okay? Where matters are now ending up to in court at an added expense. Maybe if you can give us some of these, maybe then we can set an example. Maybe that's what was consequences, maybe some of them are going to wake up. But the other thing is this, would you at some stage then want to recommend, and I know that employee are well defended by labor unions and things because they offer contribution, nothing more. And I'm saying this very seriously because let me tell you the same thing with teacher unions. It's only, I'm going to give you an example of a teacher who goes to school 1 day in a month or 1 day in 6 months and they can do nothing about it. And that's why I agree with you, Commissioner. Mainly what we need there is, yes, a government hospital or government medical practitioner to come on board and say, no, are you fit or are you not fit? Because we all hide with this medical aid behind doctors. I was just looking at it for a little bit of patient support. I think it was about 78,000 because medically, but it was about 1 hour, I think. I was only there in the hospital for 1.5 days. So can you see what is going on? But so I think that's actually, for me, a very good thing that if we could, but you need to guide us. What do you think we can do as a policy to take this in that direction so that all employees in the public sector go through, particularly in terms of not being able to go to work, a lot of them are staying away, should they be going to a particular medical officer in those areas, government appointed, so that they don't hide behind us? I think that will help us a lot. The again, even in this issue of the long suspension we talk about, you know, I know you in the department, one of the problems you're having is you talk about incompetence or people that must be fired or they must go. But very often you find even the management level are a problem. So that seems to be a problem for us as well. But I think we have that kind of a fear of actually really making a bold decision and saying, listen, I don't care which political party you come from, I don't care who you belong to, I don't care who you know, either you perform or you don't perform. Because for me, at the end of the day, my concern is everything that we do here, the taxpayers are involved. And that's why I say, when we talk about losing 35 billion rand a year, I'm saying we're losing like 200 billion rand a year through all these things, fraud, corruption, and all these things here. Do you think we'd be at some stage be able to, when we identify repeat offenders not paying these people, would we be able to blame the cost from these incompetent officials who have failed to make sure people were getting paid at 30 days and things like that, that the matter ended up in court? But, you know, if we could do that, maybe that will also give them a wake-up. Eh? I'm going to end up paying. I'm going to make sure I do my job. But one of the challenges, which I think Commissioner, you'll have picked up previously in your presentation to us previously, was the issue of the corruption on the ground. If I know the guy, I'll pay him within 2 weeks. If I don't know him, I'll pay him within 6 months. Or what are you going to give me? You give me something in return, I promise you, you can pick your check up at 3 o'clock this afternoon. That's it. And maybe what the exercise you're going to do for us, and give us, hopefully, in your mandate, I'll also repeat, we'll be able to find who in that area, in that municipality, or that is getting paid on time regularly, and who is not getting paid. And we'll probably might be able to see a link there, you know, as to what really the issue. I think the issue of the governance school in terms of the law is, it's brilliant thing what you talk about. Yes, people, and I can tell you, I see that all the time. A degree that you come out today in university, believe me, means nothing. You may not even like to write a letter of demand. That's why a lawyer, they say, can make you and they can take you. That is what is happening today. So, do you suggest that maybe we need to include in that curriculum, together with universities, okay, issues or a matter of importance to, based on what they're going to do, they're going to apply for a job in government, based on the legal, what it is, in terms of what the requirements are going to be, and expert knowledge, that they should be included in part of the curriculum. Maybe that will help us a lot in getting the right kind of people. Because, you know, my concern is that when you are promoting people from Woodlands, there's already a challenge that they're not performing. But yet there will be people that you can perform. But at the same time, you'll get people from the outside that can come out and make a difference, provided they got the necessary training. Otherwise, you'll sit at a similar problem. Here, I'll stop. Thank you.
I think the last person will be taken. The last one will be Ananan Oram Shopestole, and we will ask commissioners to respond. Then we will close the session because I want to do one more item before we break. Okay,
Honorable. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation. But I'm a bit perturbed with the issue raised here with regards to health department. The issue of outsourcing the ill health. I think that this committee will need to take this matter up because I don't think there is value for money in this. We need to have the Department of Health to come and explain what is all this. The second issue, Chair, we were talking last week with regards to our universities. Are they really producing the kind of skills that is needed by South Africa or not? What we have discovered is that it seems if no. That is why there is this mismatch of people applying just for the sake of getting the job. I know of somebody who has got a degree in sports management, but who's doing clerical work just because there was a post that indicated that you need a bachelor's degree, and everybody will present him or herself as having it because it's got the secret. It needs to be looked at the issue of the skills that is needed in South Africa so that we can take the country forward. The second issue is with regards to the Department of Education, the performance, slide number 8, I'm not mistaken. No. Where the performance feeling and the other thing is no. What is the. Let me check the slide. Slide number 11. Status of final performance agreement. What is the reason for Department of Education not fulfilling this? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in my past life, I've been in the legislature since 1994 in Limpopo, and I chaired finance for 9 years. At that time, it was required that when HODs and CFOs are employed, the Chairperson for finance must sit in those interviews. I have in those years never had an incident where any of the panelists asked for a membership cut of any political party. So I'm writing this because I have heard Honorable Sheikh Mam more than 3 times saying that the people must be asked, we don't know care where which political party you come from. You know, we mustn't say things just for the thing. Because in reality, we don't. Perhaps maybe let's take the decision that when people are interviewed, we ask them the political affiliation so that we work on facts. You know, if we keep on some fucking, I guess we're wasting time, we're wasting the taxpayers' money. Because that is not reality. It's people's weaknesses. It's not because people come from a political party, but I do understand that we're going for local government elections, and the NFP hasn't got many people. So, but I would like facts to predict in this committee. Thank you.
Okay, you are the last. Honorable Minister, I think we should allow the commissioners to respond, and after that, release them, and then we do the last item. You can be able to rush to the house. So there are many who want to go there. Commissioner, very much.
Okay, we'll stand. Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I'll respond on the question of non-submission of persons agreements. Because the honourable member wanted to know the reason why those persons agreements are not filed on time. My response would be non-compliance, because filing a performance agreement, people know when to file and what to file, but there are reasons that sometimes they give to say the IEAs don't complete the signed agreements on time, or they don't get the opportunity to sit and discuss the performance agreement and conclude and sign. So it's like one blaming the other. So when employees are asked, because I think 1 year we did ask them, we wrote a letter to say, please finish reasons why you did not file or you filed late. So they will say, I completed my agreement on time and submit it to my EA, but my EA did not conclude it on time. So it's blame game that's happening. Maybe the both the committees of parliament can actually monitor that and make sure that both EAs and HODs comply. Thank you.
Chairperson, I think that the suggestion that Honorable Manana has made is really welcome. Just today, maybe the committee would engage both the EPSA and the Department of Health on this issue, and I think the role of the National School of Government, the ideal role really is at the level, because I think there is a space for them to engage with those universities that have schools of government, so that there's like an interaction and an understanding and cross-pollination of ideas as to, if you have a school of government in your university, ideally what kind of skills and thinking that is required out of those people. But the crux really is the curricula and the continuous, not just the orientation, the continuous training that the school of government provides to the entire cohort of public servants at different levels. The fact that previously there was a bit of just outsourcing of courses and different levels, maybe you do need to outsource, but it's like a generic courses to say at entry level, what should public servants really know? How do we go about make sure that they know that? At middle management level, what are those things? At senior and at AOD level, what are the things that we train them? But most importantly, which leads into planning, is that at the change of each administration, as the new priorities and the new realities are identified for that period, how does then the School of Government make sure that you also conduct training that brings about that understanding? Right now, you should be training them on the understanding of the National Development Plan and what it means for their day-to-day activities in terms of service delivery, all those kinds of things. And we have decided at the Public Service Commission that we're going to work very closely with the National School of Government, because a lot of information also, where we identify the gaps, sits with us and we're able to share with them so that they can actually come up with curricula that is responsive to the real situation on the ground. Commissioner RK, I wanted us to have your final word.
No, let me just finally thank Honorable Chairperson for inviting us and for giving us this opportunity. We really feel as a Public Service Commission that when we are in Parliament, we are at a place where we get affirmation and we get support to ensure that the recommendations we make on improving our public service are actually taken forward. On the issue of judgment and awards, I just want to add that the department that monitors this, that reports to Cabinet on it, is the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. It would be good to call it apart from work that we are going to do. I must emphasize, Mr. Chairperson, that the President has been very keen on this thing of the 30-day payment, especially realizing that the creation of jobs is largely a function also of the small and medium business persons. And if they are dealt this way, that has that ripple effect. And it's important, the key thing that the Public Service Commission has been pushing for, we would like to attend a meeting when TPM is called in National Treasury, is the fact that there are no consequences to officials. The courts now have started, there's a leading case that has just started, where they've been asked officials themselves from their pockets to pay costs in this area. And to pay the interest also on their own. But from government side, government has just been paying from the coffers of the state, and those officials not having anything to pay for. And the last thing that Mr. Chairperson, I would also strongly advise the Chairperson that an interaction with the Presidential Remuneration Review Commission would also be very fruitful in getting the overview on the wage bill and also on the question relating to government and the structure of government. But we're very pleased for being invited today. Thank you very much.
One more comment? Yes? Chair, perhaps, you know, with the study the issue that comes up all the time, perhaps this is a hotline for SMEs that don't get paid within 30 days where they can place some sort of a complaint.
In fact, after our last appearance here, Chairperson, we had the opportunity to address the forum of CEOs and heads of treasuries and the presidency was also there. And because the focal point now to drive the whole of government to make sure that they comply has now been elevated to the presidency, we were furnished with information that they are pulling together the different call centers. One of them was a CDA and what have you. They are now putting it together to just to be one. So we were quite comforted to realize that there is that effort that's being done.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Let me, on your behalf and the commissioners, you have highlighted to us where the weaknesses are in our public service, and be rest assured that once you bring issues to the attention of Parliament, we will be able to assist you to deal with them, so that you don't feel powerless, that you make recommendations, nobody cares. I think they must come here, because we are able to call departments and agencies and make sure that we implement correct decisions. I think for work like that, we should be able to get a capable public service going into the future. That would be the objective. So we will call you again. I know members said you should do an analysis of all the departments, and I've been checking with my advisor here, how long would that take? He said, I think next week, Friday, but I don't think that's possible. Do you know how many departments we have? So, Commissioner Zeman, we'll look to you to indicate when you will be able to provide us with that. I know we've got many departments. I don't think you can do this in 2 weeks. But I think it's something that members will want to see the whole picture. We will be in touch with you and see when it's possible to have that bigger picture. We will also make time to interact with the Presidential Remuneration Commission to see how they are taking issues. But there are a lot of challenges in the public service. Not just issues of remuneration, you've raised issues of performance and a whole lot of other issues that we must, as Parliament, ensure that we enforce. But thank you very much. We will look at the issues that you have raised. Honourable members, as they leave, let's stay for 5 minutes. Yeah, one or two things I want us to conclude, but you are liberated. You can go back to Pretoria. What was?
I just realized that in terms of those declarations, there'll be no balloting. There'll be no balloting at all. We'll just be missing them by the looks of it, because all that happens is they read them and they just note the objections of any party is what they, when the declaration we all are supposed to.
And your party has no body there to do your declarations. We actually close it. So if you allow me 5 minutes, I'm going to close and then we can all rush. Because I take your point. In your case, you may have nobody raising your issues.
We have, there's quite a few there, in different comments, so we don't put different comments.
Yeah, but the main areas where they need you. Honorable members, it's just minutes. I don't want to deal with them tomorrow, because tomorrow joins. So let's rather dispense with them today. Quickly, you all have copies. We're starting on the which latest, the 22nd of October. Anything there? Honorable Singh?
Chair. The present seems to have a new party there, number 10.
Economic Freedom Fighters Africa. I think the typo. We'll correct that. Any other things? I think who moves? Yes, on our first. The 22nd. Who moves the 22nd? Honorable Tavaza moves. Seconded by Honorable Sikh. Then the next one is the 23rd of October. Anything there? Man who moves. Honorable Manana moves. Seconded by Honorable Shobesitole. Then we move to the 27. Honorable Shobesitole, you have something to raise there?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I see I'm not absent. I did send a message to the.
You did send an apology. Okay, can we correct that, Raj? Who moves to adoption? Honorable Naluka moves. Seconded? Seconded? Honorable Manana second. The next one was the 28th of October. Anything there? None, Humus. Honorable. But before that,
you have the CFF African Academy.
Vandy, do you think these people are not African? Can we correct PFS? Remove African. Who moves? The Honorable Sheikh Imam, you are moving. Any seconder? Honorable Babaza second. The last one is the 30th of October. Eh? Not the last. Let's move. Okay, 30th of October. Anything there? All right, we can deal with this one the other time. I see all of you don't have it. That concludes our meeting for today. Tomorrow we start what time? 10 o'clock where? 3454. Okay. What I would agree.
Chair, may I just offer my apology for both tomorrow and Friday? Tomorrow I have other duties in Port Elizabeth, and on Friday I'll be in the Attorney General's meeting. I will have the general meeting, but thank you, sir.
Okay, you will send it in writing so that they can record. That concludes our meeting. We'll see you tomorrow at 10 at V454. It's divided right. V454. It's a joint tomorrow. We have the Department of Higher Education and